Hi, you're listening to the Petri.com MJF Chat Show. I am Mary Jo Foley, aka your Petri.com community magnet, and I'm here to interview tech industry experts about various topics that you, our readers and listeners, want to know about. Today's MJF Chat is going to be all about evolving your mindset about the cloud, and my special guest is Tim Warner, who is a Pluralsight author and Microsoft MVP for Cloud and Data Center Management. Welcome, Tim, and thank you so much for doing this chat with me.
You're welcome, Mary Jo. Thanks for having me. It's really an honor. I've been a fan of yours for many, many years.
Oh, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. So when you and I were talking back and forth about ideas for this chat, you observed that many customers think they should design their Azure migrations to mirror their on-premises environments. But there is a huge fallacy, the idea that designing for the cloud requires some huge paradigm shift based on designing for on-prem. So I know you have a lot of thoughts on this and a lot of practical guidance. So I'm actually excited to hear what you have to say about this. Sounds really cool. And in addition, both Tim and I just got back from Microsoft Ignite 2019 with 30,000 of our closest friends. So we have a lot to talk about from there too, right?
For sure. Yeah.
So I want to start out by talking about your central thesis. Why doesn't designing for the cloud require a significant paradigm shift compared to designing from on-prem, in your view?
I've been in the industry a little over 20 years, and I've been a Microsoft specialist for just about that time. Mm-hmm. And I've found, especially over the last handful of years where I've specialized even further in the Microsoft Azure cloud, that the people and the businesses that I work with who are considering a move to the cloud have a default posture of, well, we've always done our infrastructure this way on premises. We've been virtualized for a number of years. So just de facto, that must mean that we need to migrate these VMs in place, the so-called lift and shift scenario, into Azure. And they tend to be surprised when I show them some of the platform as a service options available in Azure, and they're thinking, whoa, you can do that? I had no idea. So the main thesis I always like to drive home is that the cloud does require a very different thought pattern, a paradigm, to use a $5 term. And the biggest point is that you can look at your Azure deployment as a green field of opportunity. You definitely don't feel constrained that you have to replicate your on-premises infrastructure.
Yeah, it's kind of a combination of both of those things, right? It's there are some things that are lessons you can take from what you're doing on-prem and bring them to the cloud, but not everything, right?
Yeah, you in many ways you get an opportunity to do over. I mean, you might have your TCP/IP internet work laid out a certain way, and it's painful in certain ways, perhaps, because whoever did it, not you, your predecessor, of course, another colleague, right. What they did made some mistakes that you're kind of stuck with, and it's freeing to be able to design from a greenfield point of view in Azure. But then again, we don't want to overcompensate. There's the question of, I personally, in my architect's philosophy, keep the infrastructure in the cloud as simple as possible. The more complexity you add that's not absolutely necessary is going to exponentially increase your troubleshooting load. So just because you can deploy resources with a couple mouse clicks doesn't mean you necessarily should. I think it's really crucial to have a clear picture of what your goals are.
That's really good advice. I know. I just saw you tweet this morning some architectural diagram about the cloud, and I was like, wow, what is that?
Yeah. I know. I tweeted out a Visio drawing I put together, whereas in my work as a Pluralsight author, I want to try to pack as much content in as condensed an area as possible. So I did a little crowdsourcing. I'm looking forward to hearing what folks have to say as far as things I might have missed. I tried to make the architecture as flexible as possible, while at the same time as simple as possible.
Wow, if that was simple, I'm worried.
Right, it's all relative, isn't it? I hear you.
That's true. So, you know, there's a challenge that not just IT pros have, but we as reporters who cover the cloud have as well. And that is, there's always constant change when it comes to the cloud, right? there's always change in features and naming. Like last week at Ignite, so many products changed names. I was trying to keep up, but there was this huge list, and every day I was learning more new names. But there's also changes in licensing and pricing. This is not just true of Azure, but all of the big clouds. So what do you tell IT pros? How do they kind of learn to love, or at least to accept, this constant change?
Yeah, I think accept is the key term. Something that I hammer home with my students, consulting clients, anybody else who'll listen, is that in order to be successful with any public cloud, like you said, it is a question of reaching a steady state of acceptance that it's the environment is a shifting sand where you're liable to see something new or different just about every time you log into the Azure portal, for instance. And so, but I like to give comfort in that once you've attained your initial learning curve and you have the general lay of the land with, for instance, Azure fundamentals, then you should be in an easier position as you see these ebbs and flows and changes, because you have a ground level familiarity and comfort with the environment. It's a bit easier to adapt. Secondarily, I would recommend staying very close to, for instance, the Azure updates page at azure.com, so that you're kept abreast of products as they move through private preview and public preview and general availability. I'm a still fan, Mary Jo, of RSS. I don't know about you.
Me too.
It seems to be a forgotten technology. Yeah, I strongly suggest developing an RSS feed series of these different sources, product team blogs, because, you know, there's really no choice. You have to have an always learning orientation when you're working in the public cloud.
It's really true. Yeah, I use NewsBlur as my RSS reader, and I would be so lost without having RSS feeds. I don't even know how people do it without it.
I know. Maybe they just scan Twitter. I don't know.
I know. Yeah, I didn't know if you had any specific tips and tricks around this. So we talked about RSS feeds a little bit, but I mean, how else can you keep up with daily changes that are going on? And also, how much do you need to actually keep up with it? Because I'll tell you why I'm asking that question is, if you've subscribed to the Azure blog, every day there's at least like 8-10 new Azure announcements. And I, first, tried to keep up with all of them. And finally, I just said, you know what? That's going to drive me insane if I do that. And I need to kind of pick and choose. So I do a quick scan in the morning and see what's new and if there's anything I really think I need to write about. But I just have kind of given up of the idea that I'll always be up to date.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Thanks for reminding me about that. Yeah, certainly, principally, you want to keep an eye on the products that you're actually using in Azure, for instance. And within the Azure portal, there's a couple tools that are helpful in that regard. There's a tool called Resource Health and Service Health, where you can get a really just a filtered view of what's happening on Microsoft's side that could affect your particular services deployed in your particular regions. So I find those helpful. But then I guess I'll edit what I recommended a few minutes ago. Looking at Azure updates and looking at product blogs is fine, but first, of course, you need to run through the filter of what you're using, and is there something that could change that on Microsoft side that could affect your deployments positively, negatively, or neutrally?
That's good. Right. Same idea. You have to have filters, right? You just you can't try to understand everything and keep up with everything, I don't think. I also subscribe, I don't know if you've ever seen this, there's a weekly newsletter called the Azure Weekly Newsletter from Engine, E-N-D-J-I-N. I subscribe to that too, and they do a nice job of sending out a once weekly newsletter that gives you all the announcements in one place, and you can kind of pick and choose from that too.
You're right. I also subscribe to Engine's Azure Weekly, and I think to myself, wow, they're investing quite a bit of time curating. It's a comprehensive list of announcements that they put together. So I agree with you. That's a great one to have. And there's another weekly digest by an Azure MVP named Chris Peachman. And I think he calls his digest Azure Weekly as well.
Yes, I've seen his too. It's also excellent.
Yeah, it is. And there's a third person, another Azure MVP named Mike Pfeiffer, who has a weekly bulletin. His is called Cloud Skills. And his is even more curated. So,
it is.
Geez,
yeah,
between
that's
those
true.
Three, you've got nice coverage, it seems to me.
It's true. Really true. So let's talk about Ignite a bit, because this is another way I feel like people can try to keep up with all the change is by going to these conferences, or if you can't go, at least watch the sessions that are recorded later because they're publicly available. But, you know, I get this thing, and I think you do too as an MVP. We get this thing before these kinds of shows called the Book of News, right? And Microsoft gives us this under NDA a couple days before either Build or Ignite start. And this year, the Book of News was about 100 pages of announcements, and many, many of them were Azure announcements. So, you know, everybody's like, oh, yeah, you have the Book of News, so of course you know what happened. But I feel like still, even with that, you need filters because there were so many things. But I think we both would agree, one of the biggest announcements at Ignite around Azure was Azure Arc. And I wonder if you could kind of put that in context for people, because I tried to explain it as a layperson covering the industry, but I think you, well, I'm positive you could do a much better job.
Well, I'll try.
Okay.
Okay, so putting this in context with that notion of the paradigm shift from on-premises into the cloud. So, fundamentally, I come back to the NIST. The NIST published a white paper that gives the essential characteristics of cloud computing. And they talk about on-demand self-service and resource pooling and elasticity. And in my experience, that's what I think just about all businesses are looking for when they consider the cloud. How can we get some of this hyperscale, this easier management, this power, and make it available to us with our infrastructure? And it's the very few businesses indeed that can afford to do that in a private cloud. Now we have Azure Stack, which is still expensive, but that could serve that need. And then there's few businesses that can go cloud only and have all their infrastructure directly in the cloud. So hybrid is almost always the way that a business is going to make their foray into the cloud. So Azure Arc seems to fit into that pocket quite nicely, where you can take the Azure deployment tools and the Azure Resource Manager API and models and extend that kind of, instead of from on-premises into the cloud, I'm thinking of the opposite, the cloud on-premises. And one of my to-do items this week, as a matter of fact, is to work through the tutorials at the Azure Docs where you can onboard your on-premises virtual machines and manage them seamlessly in Azure right alongside your Azure native cloud VMs. So there's one huge value proposition, the ability to extend Azure services from the cloud and benefit, you know, get some of those amazing cloud characteristics in your existing on-premises environment. It's pretty powerful.
It is. I think it was kind of hard to understand because it also was presented in the midst of a lot of rebranding, like Azure Stack becomes Azure Stack Hub, and then brought in Azure Stack Edge. And I think when they combined those two things together, it made it look a lot more complex than it really is. I called it Microsoft's Hybrid 2.0 play, because I feel like Microsoft was already there, with, as you said, with Azure Stack, but now they're taking that a step further and trying to incorporate it so you can see all your resources wherever they are, even if they're not in Azure or Azure Stack.
Right, exactly. And I had that question right away about the relationship between Azure Arc and Azure Stack. And I actually was able to find a unicorn at the conference. I found someone who makes his living deploying and working with Azure Stack. So he was the perfect person to ask the question to.
Wow.
Yeah, I said, isn't Azure Arc robbing some of Azure Stack's business? And he said, in his opinion, no, because number one, Azure Stack is a way to just bring Azure itself in a, say, a disconnected scenario in a mine shaft or on a freighter ship in the middle of the ocean. So he didn't see them as competing.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I kind of had that same thought too. I was like, okay, where does Azure Stack fit in now to all this? So that's an interesting point. Now, I know there's another product that is near and dear to your heart, so much so that you actually did a session about it called Azure Bastion, right? And I wrote about this when it was going into preview back earlier this year, and I used Mark Rusinovich, who's the chief technology officer of Azure's description, and I said, this is a service for secure access to your off-internet VMs. That's how he described Bastion. So I know that you gave a whole session on this at Ignite, and I would like to hear how you think, well, number one, what you think of this service. Number two, how you think this fits in with your initial thesis, which is how on-prem and cloud management in people's minds should or should not be different.
Yeah, very much so. I would define Azure Bastion in an elevator pitch context as a managed jump box. And a jump box being defined as a VM, probably a shared VM among several IT professionals, where they can come in one protected host. Instead of having, worst case scenario, public IP addresses on your virtual machines, talk about paradigm shift. Rule one, never, unless it's absolutely necessary, put a public IP on a VM running in Azure. It's just asking for trouble right away. So we've got this drop-in managed appliance that you, at this point, you really don't have any direct interaction with. It's almost completely managed. The Bastion host will have a public IP address, but it's very much screened. It's just listening for traffic on the SSL port, TCP 443. The idea is that your virtual machines don't need any public IP. So you don't need to horse around with a load balancer, for instance, to try to manage those virtual machines. The idea is, as of today, through the Azure portal, you just browse to your virtual machine, go to Connect, and there's a separate tab there called Bastion. And if you haven't deployed one, you'll be prompted to do so. And then you create a remote desktop session or a secure shell session directly in the browser. And that's where we are right now, but I know it's a near-term milestone for their engineering team to support client apps. So, because that's what we would expect, it seems to me, as a working IT professional. We don't want to be tied to the Azure portal.
Right.
But that's the basic how-to about Azure Bastion, a managed jump box.
Okay. Nice.
And that can solve a lot of problems, speaking of paradigm shift, because generally, in my experience again, a business is afraid of missing something in their deployment. In other words, inadvertently exposing a virtual machine that they've got running in Azure to bad actors. Maybe they don't know how to do a jump box, or they put a public IP on the VM, like I mentioned before. That seems to be a trend I've seen with Azure as a whole, this trend toward rolling up separate products under a single name. Front Door would be an example, or just selling these individual specific appliances like Azure Firewall or Bastion Host that are meant to abstract a lot of that networking complexity that drives just about everybody up the wall. I guess that's the number one support issue that Microsoft gets. So Microsoft is trying to help, I think, in that regard.
That's funny you brought that up, because I had that same question, is whether those kind of composite products that roll up a bunch of things into a single entity are actually performing as advertised. Or I think if I were an IT pro, I might be worried about it oversimplifying and maybe over abstracting what I need to do and to a level that I shouldn't be trusting. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's a valid point. I mean, number one, there's a business that's exerted the blood, sweat, and tears to put up a geo-distributed web application where they've individually deployed and configured, for instance, the Azure Content Delivery Network, Traffic Manager, Load Balancer, all of that kind of stuff where they know exactly what it is and how it works. And then they compare that, wondering, what am I missing? Or am I missing nothing? Did I dodge a bullet by instead not doing, say, Front Door, where you just step through a wizard and behind the scenes, Azure is putting out a CDN and a traffic manager profile, but it's abstracted away most of the dials and switches. So my general guidance is, if you've already got the knowledge capital, or whatever the tech term is, where you've deployed the environment, those assets separately, and it's working fine, I guess there the question would just be a financial thing, maybe. On one hand, could you save money? And could you simplify administration by maybe going to something like Front Door? Or are you losing too much administrative flexibility, to your point, by
Right.
allowing the composite product to abstract all of the dials and switches away?
Mm-hmm.
That's
Right.
just, I think it's largely unknown. I haven't read or heard much analysis on that question yet, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was thinking it's probably a matter of personal preference to some degree.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. If a business
yeah.
doesn't have the knowledge to handle all those moving parts and they need almost a turnkey geo-distributed app, Frontdoor is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I have a personal question for you because you've
mm-hmm.
given a lot of good advice for IT pros, and some of it is applicable to me as somebody who covers the industry.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I have trouble keeping up with, and I'm curious how you do this, is how do you keep up with which Azure product compares to which AWS product and which Google Cloud product? Because I'm thinking in the case of like Google Anthos, right, and
mm-hmm.
AWS Outposts, a lot of people said those things were very similar to Azure Arc. But then when you kind of
yeah.
drill down into the documentation, I'm like, but are they?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you like compare and contrast? Like if somebody gives you a question like, oh, so what does Google have in this space? How do you keep up with that? Because I cannot keep up with it.
Yeah. Well, I have a good answer for Azure versus Amazon Web Services, but unfortunately it's a tougher lift for Google Cloud Platform. And why do I say that? Because for whatever reason, I mean, as you know, Microsoft, since Satya took over, has been so much more open and playing
right.
well with others and all of this. There's in the Azure Documentation Library at least two very solid articles that are designed specifically for that question. In fact, one of them is called something like Amazon AWS Service Comparison. And the
oh,
docs
wow.
team at Microsoft literally did a product by product table.
Oh,
so
I
that,
saw that.
It's,
yep. That was
mm-hmm.
great. That was fantastic. Yep.
So in that case, it's just Control F, type the product, and there you go. There's the answer.
Yep.
And then, like I said, there's a bunch of other stuff that Microsoft specifically curated for AWS professionals to help them in their learning curve in terms of, well, I did EC2 or Elastic Beanstalk and all this over here. How does that relate to Azure? And they've answered that.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a complete absence of GCP, and maybe there's some political intrigue in the back of things
mm-hmm.
that you may know more about than I do, but it's kind of a void with GCP and
yeah.
Azure.
It is. And a lot of times I feel like it's not something you can even do an apples to apples comparison with, right? Like Anthos to
mm-hmm.
me is kind of like AKS from Azure, but it's also sort of like Arc, and
yeah.
there's a lot of other pieces to it. So it is sometimes almost impossible to even just do a side by side comparison.
Yeah, that's well said. Whereas Amazon and Azure are so similar, since Azure Resource Manager, it almost is apples to apples.
Right.
GCP, I guess, reminds me a little bit of Apple in terms of just doing their own thing and marching to the beat of their own drummers.
It's true. It's true. They
mm-hmm.
they do. They have a they kind of came at the cloud from a different perspective, and I feel like very different from AWS and Microsoft, which is kind of interesting. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Tim, we are almost out of time. Anything else you want to suggest? We talked a lot on this show about resources, which I think is awesome because
yeah.
people ask me that all the time.
Yeah.
But any other things like podcasts that we didn't mention, or even coursework? I know you do so much with Pluralsight.
Mm-hmm.
You can tout your own course if you want. Just things
okay.
you would suggest for people who feel like I need to understand Azure a little better before I make the jump to the cloud.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, of course, I'm biased a bit because I am a teacher, and so I
Right.
come from an education perspective. But, I mean, it's crucial that you understand what you're getting into, especially if you're, you know, an elder statesperson and you've done on-premises data center work with a screwdriver in your hand for many years. I don't want no stinking cloud. And then you realize that, you know, your boss says, well, you need to start looking at it.
Yep.
I would say, number one, the Azure docs are fantastic source of truth.
Mm-hmm.
Being open source, they're very current, and you can even edit them and submit changes yourself. And associated with that, there's two sites. One would be the Microsoft Learn website. It's microsoft.com/learn. And the big feature there that I want listeners to understand is they've got a, Microsoft has a sandbox environment to where you can work through these learning labs and actually gain real hands-on experience using Microsoft subscriptions. Mm-hmm. And then from another educational aspect, from MS Learn, you can get to the Microsoft Pluralsight Partnership courses, and that's what I contribute to as part of my full-time job. There's a bunch of free Azure courses that are mapped to the different job roles, architect, administrator, developer, etc. Mm-hmm. And I would say among those resources, you should be in a good position to attain your initial learning curve, get comfortable, and get productive in Azure.
Nice. Thanks. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize you folks did a lot of free courses as well. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Pluralsight and Microsoft have been BFFs now for a couple of years. And so we're doing quite a bit of content that they make available through their website. And those courses, of which I don't know how many hours of courses it is, it's free. There's no subscription associated with it.
All right. Well, Tim, mm-hmm. we are now officially out of time, but thank you so much. This was fantastic. I can tell you're a teacher because you made it really clear and very methodical in a good way. So thanks for doing that.
That's my goal. You're welcome. And thank you, Mary Jo.
So for everyone else who's listening, all you MJF chat readers and listeners, we're getting ready for our next chat right now. I'll be posting that information on Petri, and that will be your signal to send in any questions you might want to ask before we do the chat. All you have to do is go to the MJF chat area in the forums on petri.com and submit your questions right there. And in the meantime, if you or someone you know might make a good guest for an MJF chat, please do not hesitate to drop me a note. All my contact info is available on petri.com. Thanks again.